race basically don't have real political representation in the city because of the way that city council races are organized. And so, you know, we tend to, because of the overwhelming whiteness of the city, we can push these things out of our view and pretend they're not happening. But in order for us to continue in this way, we have to explain it, right? Where racial inequity exists, the problem is you might not be responsible for it, but as long as it exists, we need to have some kind of rationale for it. We live in a supposed democracy. We live in a supposed meritocracy. So we need to come up with explanations. Those explanations are racism, right? Whatever they sound like, whatever they look like, as long as they justify racial inequity and make it go away as a problem that we're all responsible for, me, you, all of us, that's a way in which we reproduce racism.
So if you just tuned in, this is the KBOO Evening News. Our computer system crashed. It took our entire broadcast with it. So we are live here in incredible Studio 2 with our live guest, Scott Nakagawa. We're talking, and Scott, thank you again for being here.
Thank you.
We're talking about racism, structural racism. My name's Lisa Loving. I'm the Evening News Director. We're also joined by Jenna Yokoyama and Kanan Schlesinger. And we've got a full slate of callers. Let's go to John. John, what's on your mind tonight?
First of all, first thing on my mind is I'm curious, did your computers just crash, or is that, did that happen earlier in the day, or did
it not? It happened at approximately, 4:15?
4:15 sounds about right.
Yeah, 4:15.
I wonder if that's when the, because I know you guys are indoors and can't see it, but we just got slammed by this intense
It was right when the hailstorm happened. I can't say they're linked. But what do you think, what's going on?
I have two things to bring to the topic. Two things. And one of them is an extrapolation, and the other one is a powerful suggestion. And I would just like to extrapolate on, what your guest was saying about the social construct of science. I mean, we are in an ecological and social crisis today on this earth because of early scientific technology backed by Christianity. And I take those from quotes from other from theologians that I researched. And what I've learned about that, there's those, the indifferences of like the constructs of how this is set in a popular sense, and people take these popular assumed roles of social, sociological behavior. However,
hey, John, we got to wrap this up really quickly. So can you get to the point? Because we've got a full slate of callers.
Yeah, totally. But my point being is that I would like to just point out that we can to not knock science, though, because there are some brilliant things coming out of science. Like the point that I would like to make is that it is shown through scientific research that we use serotonin and melatonin to do introspection, and the way we use our huge allotments of serotonin and melatonin we get from the sun is through feeling connected and feeling like we are supported and that we are cared for. The feeling of being loved gives us the ability to use serotonin and melatonin, and science has shown that this causes great deep introspection. And in normal cases where somebody is held and they have a community around them, they gain the introspection that they need to correct the poor habits that they, or the negative behavior that they are enacting.
Awesome, John. Thank you. I get the point. I love that John said the word love. So I think we have another caller. Maybe the caller just wiggled away. If you just tuned in, this is the KBOO Evening News. Oh, wait, let's go to Judy. Judy did call. Judy, what's on your mind tonight?
Hi. I'm just sort of, I'm thrilled to hear this discussion. I love it. I'm a substitute teacher in a community that is not Portland. And just a comment, an observation that... the racism is being unleashed in our young people. I'm seeing evidence of it in the classroom with young men in particular supporting Trump and talking about immigration in a very negative way. And it's distressing. And, you know, there's a tremendous amount of white bonding that goes on in the classroom. And when kids are presented with issues around racism, like when they talk about the L.A. riots, instead they don't call it the uprising, you know, a lot of things come out in those discussions. And it's a reflection, I think, of what they've learned at home, but they are now disseminating out into the community.
Judy, so, how old are they? How old are your students?
This is high school.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Judy, what do you think that we, as the adults that are not in the classroom, should be doing?
I think, you know, the old thing of interrupting racism, bringing up, you know, having the courage to not just let it go by, to, you know, just say something, do something to offer a different viewpoint.
Great.
And, that's what I try to do. And, you know, goes over like a lead balloon sometimes.
Judy,
I
wanted to thank you for calling.
Yeah.
I really appreciate your call. This has been interesting hearing what people have to say. I'm assuming everyone is a KBOO Evening News listener, even though this is not the usual broadcast we do. If you just tuned in, our computers crashed. We lost our broadcast. We're forging ahead with our anchors, Jenna Yokoyama and Kanan Schlesinger. And we're interviewing Scott Nakagawa live for the whole hour. He was going to be our 10-minute live guest. This is, I'm sorry, Scott, but this is better. In my opinion, this is better. We have Robert on the line. Robert, what's up with you tonight?
Hey, I just wanted to sort of add to the point Scott was making about the way cultural hegemony operates. So I think one of the things that happens here in Portland, and this has sort of been my experience working in different places, is that there's this white sort of cultural power structure in place that sort of makes a lot of assumptions. So they assume that they're the ones who know best how it is that this should be done. And if it doesn't sort of abide by that, well, then there's something inherently wrong sort of with this other group. And on the one hand, it can sort of operate sort of in a very innocuous way in that it's just white folks being white folks, right, doing how it is that they do culture. But what ends up happening is that at its worst, if anything doesn't register on their radar as important, like no matter how much it is that we clamor as communities, like they don't see that as important. Or they say it's important, but they don't dedicate any resources or time to it. So that white folks being white folks ends up becoming a border and a barrier and a serious obstacle for people of color. So I wanted to share that point. And then secondly, around equity, what does equity mean, right? Equity means that we all have equal say in how it is that resources are distributed and in that decision-making process. So even though there's a lot of organizations and there's a lot of money around equity, it's still white people deciding what to do with that money and who it is that they're going to give it to. And the idea is that if we do sort of like an anti-racism class, that we're going to be able to like get rid of racism, and presupposes that they want to get their staff to be able to understand us, and then they'll be able to work in that way. Well, if we wait for that, we're going to be waiting a long time. Whereas if the resources were given to us in health, education, or whatever those of us who have experience, to be able to decide what they do with that money, and then white folks who are working in those fields observe how it is and we go about things, then they get a sense of our culture, a sense of our values, a sense of how we can go about things to create meaningful results in terms of equity. Anyway, so that's all I wanted to share.
Thank you. Thank you. Can't add anything to that. I do believe that we have Jim on the line. Hey, Jim, what's going on?
Me?
Yeah, that's you, man.
Hey, I just wanted to point out something. Folks, a couple of callers back were talking about the fiasco at Malheur Reservation. You know, there is an ALEC movement that's generating a land grab.
Around the sheriffs. The conservative mm-hmm. sheriffs are electing sheriffs.
Yes, and this is a concerted effort that has been going on for a very long time. That it's not reported, and we really don't know. I'm looking at a website, High Country News. High Country News, I recommend anybody interested to go and look at their website. They're generally pretty good. But yeah, Alec is actually behind this whole Malheur reservation fiasco.
And that's the American Legislative Exchange Council, the conservative panel that's funded by the Koch brothers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I want to thank you for calling. Thank you for calling, Jim. We've got 5 minutes left in this hour, and I feel like we should bring Scott back on to talk. I'm sorry, wait. Jenna, Kanan, got any questions? Anything you want to throw out there?
Yeah, we're still here, are we?
Yeah.
I did want to hear a little bit about November of 1988 and how that kind of gave course to some of the most perhaps heated moments in your tenure in Portland.
Well, for me, November 1988 was a kind of seminal moment because in November 1988, Governor's Executive Order, Neil Goldstein was our governor at the time, banning discrimination against LGBT people in public employment got rescinded through a ballot measure sponsored by the Oregon Citizens Alliance. And then within just days, on November 12th, actually, a young man named Mulgeris Ra, mentioned earlier, was beaten to death with a baseball bat by neo-Nazi skinheads. And those neo-Nazi skinheads were part of an organized movement that was trying to take advantage of the very white demographic in Oregon and the Northwest in order to try to build a white homeland. And as unrealistic as that seems, they came here in tremendous numbers and became very popular in certain parts of the city of Portland. And so it was what got me involved in efforts to fight the right and got me involved with the Coalition for Human Dignity, which was something that was started by other people other than me, originally as a city and community coalition, and that broke up and became something that was led basically by community activists. But yeah, so it was a really big month here. One of the things that happened as well around that time was that after Mulugeta was murdered, hate crime statistics in the city of Portland went up, right? Everywhere else in the country where a similarly famous murder happened, hate crime statistics would go down. And we soon heard from the Portland police that there were no neo-Nazi skinheads in Portland, that there were no organized groups, and there was no problem. And so the coalition actually got started in part in order to hold the police here accountable, right? To get law enforcement involved in trying to do something about the problem. So it was a very important time.
And how shortly after that did your involvement with KBOO start?
I can't remember exactly when I started here at KBOO, but I do remember we were invited to join the programming team here at KBOO by Margaret Fasulo. And,
love you, Margaret.
Yes. And who also produced the show because we were hopeless. We had no idea what to do. We just talked, right? It was specifically in order to try to create a space at KBOO for a community organization involved in activism to be able to actually mobilize people through the radio. And that's what we did. You know, we named neo-Nazi activists by name. We often gave out their addresses. We talked about where they worked. If we knew they were tied to violent crimes.
Very dangerous radio. That was radical stuff, man.
If we knew they were involved in violent crimes, we would expose them in that way and invite people to call their employers or to call them at home or to show up at their doorstep and to basically make things as uncomfortable as possible for them. Hmm. And that's what we did here. And actually, after I left, the show carried on for many years under with Pat McGuire as the programmer.
Pat McGuire's still in town, a great attorney. Yay, Pat McGuire!
Yeah.
We have about 2 minutes left. What do you think? What should we do with the last 2 minutes of this incredible KBOO Evening News broadcast?
I do have one question left for our guest. We've talked about a lot of the problems that we have. What can minority groups, the communities of color here in Portland, as you said, you know, we're a very politically small, very non-influential group here in Portland. What can those communities do to find some political empowerment?
Well, you know, I'm going to talk really broadly here. I think that what's necessary, what's pointed, what the woman who called, who was a substitute teacher, pointed out, you know, with her students, Judy. Thank you. With her students kind of, you know, falling behind Donald Trump and all of his racist and xenophobic rhetoric, it's necessary for us to engage in a three-way fight, right? As activists, we often think we need to fight the power, we need to fight the state, but we also need to contend with the fact that there are grassroots movements out there, like the people who, you know, who occupied the bird sanctuary at Malheur, who are actually moving the goalpost. even as we define issues. We've seen this a lot in the immigration battle, right? That we name specific demands and we bring them to our decision makers, and that by the time the discussion starts, the goalpost has been moved because people on the right have reframed the conversation around some other kind of threat, like people bringing drugs into the country, you know, so that suddenly we're unprepared to deal with something that has been raised that might be a complete red herring, but is nonetheless starting to define the debate.
All right. It is 30 seconds before 6 p.m. And I have to say, this is the end of the KBOO Evening News for tonight. I want to thank Scott Nakagawa, our live guest. Really appreciate your time.
Real quick, thanks. Can we give out his website?
It's please
change,
do.
Changelab.com. Changelabinfo.com.
Changelabinfo.com. A lot of writing on there. Jenna Yokoyama, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Kanan Schlesinger.
Been a wild ride.
And our engineer, Sequoia Wright. It's 6 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Oddville, a new vaudevillian tradition, March 13th at 7 p.m. at the Steep and Thorny Way to Heaven in Portland. Oddville, a new vaudevillian tradition, is a brand new variety show style monthly night, taking cues from vaudevillian traditions and narrative comedy. Each month's showcase features a different lineup of performers, bringing together a wide range of artistic disciplines and focusing on polished short pieces from our thriving clown, circus, vaudevillian, and alternative performance communities right here in Portland. Again, that's